Hello and welcome back to the Football Postcast here on the Racing Post, your one-stop shop for all of the finest betting insight from our expert tipsters. The international break is finished and it's time to look ahead to a feast of Premier League action this weekend. With myself, Jack Reeve, I'm delighted to be able to be joined with Aaron Ashley and Dan Childs of the Racing Post Sport Desk, as well as Andy O'Rourke from our sponsors, Paddy Power. Gents, I'm going to skip the international break. I mean, England were topsy-turvy and it was all fairly bleak, to be fair. Let's get into the Premier League action because this is what we've been waiting for the last couple of weeks. And what a way to kick things off. We've got a Merseyside derby, Everton taking on Liverpool. This is the 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. You can catch this on BT Sport 1 if you're wanting to watch it. Andy, welcome to the show, my friend. Let's have a show of the prices. And what's your thoughts on this one?
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, absolutely huge way to start the weekend's football. Everton are 11-4, Liverpool are 5-6, and the draw is 3-1. Now, I don't have the guts to actually pick out a winner here. I had a couple of run-ups to it during the week trying to pick something, and I've kind of decided to go for a bit of a first goal scorer poke. So I'm going to take Virgil van Dijk to score first at 14-1. The reasoning behind that is I think Everton have done really well in the transfer window, bringing in Alan and Decore. It's given them a lot more solidity in midfield, and they look a bit tougher to break down, although they have conceded in most of their games this season. They just look a bit more, about them defensively. So I think a set piece might be the most viable route to an opening goal for Liverpool here. They actually led in terms of headed goals last season with 16. And I just think that's kind of maybe a route in for Van Dijk to get a goal. Also, just as a kind of a smaller outside poke, if Yerry Mina starts, I'd be interested to have a look at him anytime at 12-1. In that headed goals table, Everton actually came second. So if there's a goal in this game, there's a good chance of being a header.
Yeah, Virgil van Dijk, nice little angle that. Dan, I mean, this is a fantastic opportunity for Everton, isn't it? Liverpool coming off the back of that horror show against Aston Villa and Everton going well.
Yeah, it's a game where, I mean, I think the outcome could sort of change the narrative at the moment. You've got Everton, you know, being talked up after their four wins and people wondering whether they can keep it going and maybe be genuine challengers. And then Liverpool after that awful 7-2 result against Villa, you know, whether they can respond to that. I actually think, you know, now it's early in the season, but I like what I've seen of Everton. I think they can get a draw here. You look at the, I mean, the price for the draw, 3-1. When you think the last eight games at Goodison between these two, seven of them have been draws. The last three have been 0-0 draws. So, I mean, it's a game, derby games often, both teams, you know, are desperate to avoid defeat. And I think that may apply even more to Liverpool now. After that a disastrous performance at Aston Villa, it might be a game where it's more important for them not to lose than to actually go and chase the win. Confidence has got to be a bit of an issue after such a poor result. I mean, they should be better if Henderson should be ready to come into that midfield, which was exposed really against Villa. Everton, I've been so impressed with them, even when the Brighton game particularly, because they had quite a few injuries there. You know, no Gomez, no Allen, you know, two of the key midfielders were out. Richarlison got injured early in that game, they still ran out deserving 4-2 winners. So I think they're going to have a very good season, Everton, and they can get a draw.
Aaron, is there almost kind of an air of expectation amongst Everton fans going into this? I mean, their record against Liverpool over you know, the last few years has been poor. But as Dan mentioned there, they've looked good so far. And Liverpool maybe just struggling more than some have thought this season.
I think the international break may have came at the right time for Liverpool. I think if this game was played directly after the Villa game, straight after, I think I'd gave Everton a really strong chance of doing the job. Liverpool would have been missing Mane, they'd have been missing Alcantara, Henderson would have been short on match fitness. But with all those three back, I think it's a bit of a different story. So I'm less tempted to go with Everton. I do think that both teams to score an over 2.5 at 8-11, it seems pretty obvious, but I think it's the play. I think both have so much attacking talent on show, but they do still show defensive frailties. Pickford obviously makes a few errors for Everton, and Liverpool with no Alisson. Both teams have scored in 8 of the 10 league games that Adrian started last season, and obviously he was in net for the 7-2. And I think they have less confidence with Adrian in behind than Alisson. So I think, yeah, that's the play for me.
Andy, I'm going to put you on the spot here quickly and see how quickly you can navigate the Paddy Power website. What's the kind of outright market for the Premier League looking like? I was reading and hearing earlier in the week that there's actually been money coming in for Everton to go all the way.
Yeah, you're right, Jack. They've actually become kind of fourth favourites now. So it's Liverpool 6-5, Man City 6-5, Chelsea 12-1, Everton 17s, Tottenham 19 and 20 for the rest. So they actually have come in now. They're fourth favourites in this, in the outright market. Still a relatively big price. There's an interesting poke I was looking at was Everton without Man City and Liverpool at 13-2 outright for the rest of the season. Could be an interesting one to take the two big dogs out. Still 13-2 available. Seems like a decent shout if they can continue on the unbelievably good form they've shown so far.
Wow, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see whether they can sustain the early form. Brilliant stuff from Everton so far. Let's move on to Chelsea versus Southampton then. This is on BT Sport once again, 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Andy, we'll stay with you for a show of the prices, please.
Yeah, so a bit of creativity going on down the trading floor here. It's Chelsea are 40-85. The draw is 17-5 and Southampton are 5-1.
Dan, let's get your thoughts on this game. Chelsea, what have you made of their start to the season and how will this game play out?
Yeah, very up and down, Chelsea. I mean, you had that crazy sort of 3-3 draw at West Brom. The Palace game, they had a really good second half. Then it was 0-0 at half-time. They ran out 4-0 winners. But I'm still not sold on their defence, Chelsea. Thiago obviously made that bad mistake against West Brom. I think he's still settling into the league. And they had a poor defensive record last season. I mean, they spent a lot of money improving their attack. I know I brought Chilwell in at left back, but I actually think he's probably better at going forward than he is defensively anyway. So, I mean, following on from that, I think Chelsea are too short here. I'd be going for Southampton or draw double chance at, comfortable odds against Price. Southampton got a good record at Stamford Bridge in recent times. Two seasons ago, got a 0-0 draw. That they won their last season 2-0, I think, last season at Stamford Bridge. But Danny Ings is in confident mood after that, the goal he scored for England. Moussa Gineppo looked really good, I thought, in the 2-0 win against West Brom, got his goal. So I think they'll cause Chelsea problems. I'll go with Southampton or draw, double chance.
Aaron, I mean, there are a lot of people very keen on Chelsea at the start of the season. I know Bruce in his column wrote that he's keen on them to go all the way with after their kind of transfer business that they'd completed in the summer. Can you see them kicking on starting here?
They're still a work in progress for me, and it's only right to expect they're going to take time to hit top stride. I mean, they've signed a lot of attacking players, and I don't think Lampard, he still doesn't know his best system or his preferred team. He's obviously got Abraham or Werner, who can both lead the line. Ziyech and Pulisic are both going to be back in the reckoning for this. It just adds to the problems. I'm expecting them to take time to adapt to Lampard's ways. And I think, Southampton or draw, double chance at 13-8 looks a good bet to me. They're a hard side to predict, but when they're good, they're really good. They obviously won here last season. They beat City and they arrive on the back of consecutive wins over Burnley and West Brom. Chelsea, like Dan said, defensively, I'm still worried about them. And Danny Ings, if you give him a sniff, he's going to take it. So, Southampton will draw a double chance for me.
Andy, 40-85, you said, Chelsea's price. Is that a price you're willing to play at?
It's a bit short for me for the reasons outlined by the lads. Chelsea are very vulnerable defensively. I mean, Thiago Silva started and looked way off the pace in his first game, and you'd expect them still to kind of be shaky. And, you know, the lads have already said Danny Ings is in confident mood, and with him on song, Southampton always pose a goal-scoring threat. So I'm going to go slightly against what the guys have said here. I think with Chelsea's attacking options, they're just, you know, if one thing isn't working, they have three or four lads to call from on the bench to try and change things up. So I'm going to go Chelsea to win and both teams to score at 9-5. So trying to take into account the kind of defensive mishaps, but also how strong they are going forward.
No, great stuff. Okay, this is another absolute corker of a game. Manchester City taking on Arsenal, 5:30. This one is on Sky Sports. Andy, we'll stay with you. Let's get your selection here and also how are Paddy Power pricing this?
Yep, so City are 2-5, Arsenal are 11-2, and the draw is 15-4. It's a really interesting game. City could be going into this 11 points behind first place if Everton get the win. And it's just, that's a phenomenal amount to be behind after four games. They're probably lucky to be hitting Arsenal at this point of the season, where I don't think they've played particularly well this year. They're lucky to beat West Ham and on expected goals, and they didn't exactly create a massive amount against a pretty poor Sheffield United side. Aubameyang, their kind of key man, hasn't really hit top form yet. Having said that, City haven't been exactly brilliant either. The Leeds game, they had 23 shots on goal and only two of them actually found the target. So they've really struggled with Aguero and Gabriel. And I don't think either of those guys are going to be fit for Saturday. So I'm going to opt for under 3.5 goals at 8 to 11, just given that both teams seem to be not notching as many goals as they usually do.
Dan, what about you? I mean, I sound like a broken record, but I understand that the price on Manchester City for the outright market at the start of the season, Andy gave us a spin of the current market and they're still 6-5 to win the league. Have you seen anything from Manchester City that kind of warrants that price, and what do you think will happen here?
I haven't, no. I'd have to agree with you, and I think they're going off at too short a price for a lot of their individual matches. And in this case, I mean, tip's going to be Arsenal or draw, double chance. I think it's overpriced. As has been mentioned, you know, a lot of problems with injuries at the moment with Aguero and Jesus, you know, look unlikely to be ready. De Bruyne limped off of Belgium as well and didn't feature in their 2-1 victory against Iceland. So, I mean, that could be another massive blow for them. I mean, look at their last two league games. They've lost 5-2 at home to Leicester, 1-1 draw at Leeds, which I thought was a fair result watching the game. And against an Arsenal side that much better organised now under Arteta, and they're no longer a soft touch in these games against the big teams. And it's been talked about that they've made hard work of beating the lesser teams, but I think the way they play now, much more willing to sit deep and counter-attack sides, it makes them more of a threat against the big sides. This year, they've beaten Man United, Liverpool, Manchester City in the Cup semi-final and Chelsea in the FA Cup final. None of those wins were away, which is a concern, but they've got 9 points from 12 games this season. By City, I'm backing them to avoid defeat.
Aaron, I think our fans will be fairly chuffed with the transfer business that they've seen happen at their club so far. Maybe away from Gunnosaurus, but except for that, it's been fairly positive, hasn't it?
It is, and Arteta, he deserves a lot of praise. I mean, he's getting them going in the right direction. It's obviously, again, a bit like Chelsea's, a bit work in progress. It's not going to be instant, but you managing to keep Aubameyang showed massive intent, and under Arteta and with him leading the line, they can certainly build. For me, I think with all these injuries to City's key attacking players, with Aguero obviously and Jesus obviously both likely to miss out, De Bruyne limped off, Sterling, I think he might be a doubt as well. So Riyad Mahrez could be a tempting first goal scorer option. He opened the scoring against Leicester and he netted 11 goals from just 19 starts in the Premier League last season. And he is a big game player. He tends to turn up for these big matches. He scored for Algeria in midweek and his trickery could cause Arsenal plenty of problems, who still don't convince defensively.
No, that sounds like a good steer, that, Aaron. Okay, let's move on to the 8 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. That's Newcastle against Manchester United. Once again, this one is on Sky Sports. And Andy, take us away with the prices and your pick for this.
Yeah, so this is Newcastle are 15-4, Man United are 8-13, and the draw is 3-1. I'm actually a Newcastle fan, so I'm slightly hoping against hope that we can do something here, especially given how United played against Spurs last time out. And I think with that 6-1 result, they'll be looking to, you know, try and reverse things, and they're under serious pressure to get something here. Solskjaer won't want a disappointment against Newcastle to follow up a really bad result against Spurs. I've been interested to see Alan Saint-Maximin signed a new contract during the week, and I think he's started the season quite well, and with that little boost of confidence, he could really enjoy himself against Luke Shaw here. He was untouchable against Burnley, and just with how lively and quick he is, and the match with the fact that United need to kind of go and win this, there could be plenty of space for him, and I think he's going to enjoy his evening against Man United. So I'm going to have him at 5-1 any time to score a goal.
It's been a good transfer window for you guys, hasn't it?
Yeah, not too bad at all. I mean, even though he's a countryman, I don't understand the Jeff Hendrick signing, but I do really like Wilson. He gives us kind of a goal scoring threat up front. If he gets a chance one on one, you'd expect him to take it, which we haven't had for quite a while. The left back Jamal Lewis looks okay, and Ryan Fraser, when he gets fit, could offer us something a lot different. So yeah, it's been one of the most positive transfer windows in a long time, but having said that, that's not much of a claim for Newcastle.
Dan, I mean, there's names that Andy's mentioned there that can certainly cause Manchester United problems, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone for a couple of surprises in the early games. I'm actually going to go just for the Newcastle victory here. I think that is a massive price, nearly 4-1 to win this game. I mean, when you look at, they've got 7 points, Newcastle, from four games, a very decent start. As has been mentioned, I thought Sam Maximin looked really sharp against Burnley. Doesn't always supplied the finish. Last season, he often failed to come up with a final ball or a final finish, but he took his goal really well, actually, against Burnley. Callum Wilson, another two goals. He's had a really good start to his career there. And the two of them, that gives him a real good counter-attack threat against the United side that are going to be under real pressure now to get back up and running and get a win. I think United are going to feel they're going to have to push forward, could leave themselves a little bit exposed. I look at Man United's league form. I don't think they played well in all three games. I thought the 3-2 against Brighton, they were very fortunate to, you know, might have even been fortunate to get a point from that game. Brighton were a better side. Obviously, they were dreadful against Crystal Palace and then got battered by Spurs. You've got issues for them up front. Anthony Martial be suspended, I think, for this one after his red card against Spurs. Cavani, by the sounds of it, is not going to be able to play because of self-isolation rules. So, no, a lot of issues. And you've got Maguire after his performance for England, you know, big doubts over whether he's going to play. And if he does, you know, what sort of contribution he's going to make. So, no, Newcastle overpriced for me.
Aaron, are we getting a little bit carried away with Manchester United's form here? I mean, that squad is still very impressive and at times they have been good. What do we make of this game?
No, definitely not for me. I think Newcastle were a great bet, 4-1. I mean, you've got United. They shipped three in defeat to the Palace. They conceded twice against Brighton in a 3-2 win. But Brighton struck the woodwork four times and had 18 shots. I just think that they're so devoid of confidence at the back. And that's even translating onto the international scene this week. De Gea made a mistake against Ukraine. Harry Maguire was sent off against England, against Denmark. And you could see he just looked so short on belief. And I think if those two start again today, I think Sam Maximin and Callum Wilson are going to cause them so many problems. Newcastle finally got a goal scorer. Wilson, he's four from four this term. And I think those two can just cause a lot of problems. And at 4-1, I think it's a massive price.
Newcastle fans, that will be happy listening for you. Right, Sunday, Monday and the naps still to come. Stay with us.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome back to part two of the Football Postcast here on The Racing Post with myself, Jack Reeve, joined alongside Aaron Ashley and Dan Childs from The Racing Post Sport Desk and also Andy O'Rourke from our sponsors, Power. Let's get straight into Sunday's games then. And it kicks off with Sheffield United against Fulham on BT Sport. Andy, how are Paddy Power pricing this?
So Sheffield United are 11-10, Fulham 13-5 and the draw is 9-4.
Dan, I'm going to come to you first because I know you haven't been too sweet on Sheffield United this season and it's probably difficult to be keen on Fulham. So how on earth do we kind of play this one?
Yeah, I think they're both among, you know, I wouldn't go overboard. I think they're both among about eight teams, you know, that I would expect to be involved in the relegation battle. And I just thought at the start of the season, they looked overpriced at Sheffield United in that relegation betting. And I think they're a little bit too short here to beat Fulham. Both teams obviously had a dreadful start to the season, looking for their first point of the season. And Sheffield United, I just think it's a game where I think they're missing the impact of their crowd. You know, this behind closed doors for them, with that Bramall Lane atmosphere behind them, they tended to play at a much higher tempo. I think this season, maybe a little bit of that tempo has gone and the confidence is being affected as well. I don't think they've got abundance of top-class match-winning players in the key forward areas. So it's vital for Sheffield United that they play at that tempo. Fulham, actually, I look at their attack and I think they got a little bit more quality with Mitrovic there leading the line for them. I also think that a couple of the signings that they made later in the window may help them going forward. I think Ruben Loftus-Cheek will improve their midfield. Adamola Lookman as well, I think, who's coming from Leipzig, I think he'll give them another dimension going forward. I think it'll be a tough season for Fulham, but I wouldn't completely say they're certainties for a bottom three finish. And that follows on here. I just think at the prices, it'd be a tight game, but I would go with Fulham draw no bet as a bit of value I think it's around 6-4.
Interesting. Andy, are you in agreement or are you resigned to Fulham, you know, going down this season?
Yeah, I think Dan's right. Loftus-Cheek and Luckman look like good signings. Luckman came on last time out, and I think it was only one sequence of play, but he looked lively and played a really good through ball that probably should have finished with a goal. So those late signings from Scott Parker could actually help Fulham in a big way. But I do think they're a bit out of their depth. Maybe getting up in the playoff final was one season too early, both for the manager and for the side themselves. Although Scott Parker does look like he's cut out for management, I just don't know if he's going to have enough this season. They're 1-4 to go down, and we kind of expect them to. They're favourites in the rock bottom market as well. It is a tough one to call because Sheffield United have been poor and they do seem to benefit from the home crowd, the Bramall Lane atmosphere. So I'm going to opt for the draw at 9-4 here. I think for either team to lose this is pretty disastrous given the start that they've had, and I think it's going to be a cagey game. And it might just end in a drab affair where both teams kind of realise they're happy with the point with 20 or 15 minutes to go.
Aaron, we all know how kind of short football fans' memories are. Are we all kind of forgetting that what Sheffield United are capable of here, or are they kind of, you know, have they taken a step backwards?
They've definitely taken a step backwards. I think teams have become more acclimatized to what Sheffield United are all about, and they kind of know how to deal with them now. Although at the same time, this is a massive match for both teams, and I just have more faith in Sheffield United defensively than I do Fulham. Only 9 of Sheffield United's 42 Premier League games have featured 3 or more goals, and they've conceded 2 or more in only 4 of their 21 games at home. I think that Fulham, who failed to score against Arsenal, Villa and Wolves, they're quite one-dimensional, and it's Mitrovic or it's no way. And I think Sheffield United will be able to deal with him. So for me, the sign of Rian Brewster might offer a bit more for Sheffield United going forward, and I think they can nick a low-scoring game. Sheffield United under 2.5 at 3-1 would be the way for me.
Good stuff, Aaron. Yeah, I'm excited to see what Rian Brewster can do. He was absolutely brilliant at Swansea last season, wasn't he? Okay, let's move on to the next game on Sunday. 2 o'clock kickoff this one. Crystal Palace take on Brighton on Sky Sports. And Andy, how are we going with this?
Palace are 13-8. The draw is 21-10. And Brighton are 17-10.
What's your pick?
I think there's not much between these sides on paper, and that's kind of reflected in the odds. I think Brighton have been quite unlucky so far this season. Results haven't gone their way, even though they played really well against Chelsea and they were outrageously unlucky against Man United, which we touched on. They hammered the post 4 or 5 times, and the penalty debacle at the end was just ridiculous. They were very unlucky not to get anything out of that, and they unfortunately tore strips off Newcastle in one of the earlier games this season. And if I know it's only 4 games in, but if unexpected points, they'd be 6th. Well ahead of Palace, and that was the same case last season where they were well ahead of Palace on the expected points table, and plenty of attacking options, so I'm going to go for them at 17-10.
Yeah, Brighton, they've looked good so far, haven't they, Dan?
They play good football. They've lost 3 of their 4 matches. I'm going to go with Palace here. I think at the prices, I think Palace are a team that the markets don't like, and Brighton are a team that the markets like, but looking at the results and even performance-wise, I looked at Brighton against an injury-hit Everton last time, and they got caught, as often happens, overplaying in the wrong areas, and you know were swept aside really. I mean, 4-1 down and nicked a late consolation goal in injury time, and you know that's a running theme really. They often like to play good football, but can get caught out with that high line. And Palace, you know, with the pace they got going forward, I think can expose them. I mean, when you're assessing Palace, you actually think you're looking at they've lost 4-0 at Chelsea, all the goals coming in the second half. But that's the one bad half they've had this season. I mean, they've won at beaten Southampton on the opening weekend of the season 1-0, won 3-1 at Manchester United, the 2-1 against Everton, competed really well, got done by a joke penalty decision. So, I've been impressed with Palace this season. I think they're a bit overpriced in this game.
Aaron, what about you? Are you in agreement with Dan?
This is another tough game to call. I think the way the game will pan out may suit Palace. I mean, Brighton, they like to keep the ball. They're a good possession-based team. But for all their excellent football, they've won only 5 of their last 27 Premier League matches. And I could see Palace doing them on the counter. Last season, when Brighton hosted Palace, Palace won 1-0. They lost a shot count 23-10, and they scored a late goal on the counter. And I can see similar here. And I think Zaha at 3-1 to score any time might be the way to go. He scored more goals against Brighton than he has against any other opponent with 6. And he scored in 2 of the last 3 Selhurst Park meetings between the pair. He started strongly with 3 goals in 4 games. He netted against Southampton. He scored 2 against United. In a tight match, his quality could be the difference.
Brilliant stuff. 4:30 sees Spurs take on West Ham. This one is on the Sky Sports main event channel. And Andy, I was convinced that West Ham were going to have a tough season this time around, but they've started pretty well, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, the first game of the season, Newcastle played them off the park, and it kind of looked like, geez, if Newcastle are doing that to you, it's not going to be a good season. But they've really turned it around since then. David Moyes has been a shining example of what you can achieve working from home since then. And they've actually looked really, really good, I think, apart from the Newcastle game, which you could probably just chalk down to a blip at this stage, given how well they've played. And I fancied them to get something out of this one. Spurs are 11-20, the draw is 16-5, and the Hammers are 9-2. And it just feels like a big enough price. Maybe the market's been a bit too kind to Spurs for the 6-1 against United. So I'm going to play West Ham plus 1 at 13-10. Based on XG, they were unlucky against Arsenal, and they've had 2 cracking results since then. They're 7-0 on aggregate for their last 2 games. And I think if they can take anything like that form into the Spurs game, Antonio can come. Well worth a play at plus 1 at 13-10.
Aaron, what do we read into that Spurs thrashing of Manchester United? I mean, was that a fantastic performance, or was it simply Manchester United, you know, not being at the races that day? And how do we see this one going?
It was a bit of both for me. I know United went down to 10, but I'm not sure that was even a factor. Tottenham were great. They hit them on the counter, and with Son and Kane, they're always going to cause a lot of problems. Although for me, I think both teams are scoring over 2.5 goals is the way here. I mean, Spurs have not kept a clean sheet in 8 competitive games this season, which includes 3 Europa League ties against what you'd have to say is mediocre opposition. And with Antonio and Bowen, I think West Ham carry great threat. Scored 4 against Wolves, 3 at Leicester, and they scored in defeat against Arsenal and probably deserve more. They've actually only failed to score in 1 of the last 10 trips to Tottenham, and this is a big game for them. So David Moyes back in the dugout. I'm not sure if that's a positive or not, but both teams are scoring over 2.5 would definitely be the way to go.
Dan, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm on a similar theme, but I'm going to combine it with a Spurs win. So I'm going to go Spurs to win and both teams to score to bump the price up. But I think the improvement had been coming quite a bit before the 6-1 at Manchester United. You look at the week they had before, the Chelsea, I think, where they put out, you know, almost the second string side in the Carabao Cup and came through on penalties. It was a really good performance, actually, from Spurs in that game. Then got the 7 goals against Maccabi in the Europa League. That's topped up the confidence even more. And then, as Aaron mentioned, they're playing well, Spurs, at 11-11 against Manchester United, and then swept the side. You've also got the added factor of Gareth Bale coming into the equation. Apparently, he's been looking really sharp in training. May not start the game, but almost certain to be involved at some stage. You've got Kane and Son in great form at the moment. Kane and Ndombele is now looking a really good midfield player. Was excellent in the 6-1 victory at Manchester United. So there's lots of positives for Spurs now. They're just going to outscore teams. But the issues for them, as have been mentioned, are at the back. And West Ham, I do fancy them to get a goal. They've had, 7 goals without conceding the last 2 games. 4-0 against Wolves. Brilliant 3-0 win against Leicester. Antonio and Jarrod Bowen playing very, very well, but I just think they're going to struggle to contain that Spurs attack. So Spurs to win and both teams to score.
Yeah, can't wait to see Gareth Bale in the Premier League. What a delight of a player he is to watch when he's on form. And the late kickoff on Sunday is Leicester against Aston Villa. Andy, what are the prices for this one? And let's get a quick word on Jack Grealish, actually. I know he's been hitting the headlines as always this week. Gareth Southgate just doesn't seem that keen on him. How good of a player and how important is he to Aston Villa at the moment?
Yeah, so I'll go through the prices first. Leicester are 6-5. The draw is 27-10. And Villa are a shade over 3-1 at 31-10. Jack Grealish is a tough one to talk about for international-wise. If he played for Ireland, we'd probably be in the Euros now and looking pretty good. I don't know why he doesn't play play for England. I think Gareth Southgate likes to play three or four right backs, and that limits how many attackers you can get on the pitch. But he's a phenomenal player. I mean, even De Bruyne was talking about him during the week about how good he is. And I think he could cause trouble here. This is another cracking game. We've really been treated to some great fixtures to kind of reward us for getting through an international break. There's just bags of attacking talent on each side. James Maddison should be back for Leicester. They sorely missed him against West Ham. And he'll have had the benefit of an international break to get himself right. I can't pick a winner in this because they're both so good attacking. And, you know, Villa were irresistible against Leicester with that front three of Watkins, Barkley and Grealish. So I'm going to go for over 3.5 goals at 7-5 and just cheer in goals on Sunday evening.
Great stuff. Yeah. Great. Grealish is such a player, isn't he? But one of my kind of irrational hatreds in football is his socks and shin pads combo. They are so small. They don't even cover his shins. If he was to get a knock to the shin, it's game over for him. Dan, I guess Villa are proof, aren't they? If you can stay in the Premier League for a season, it's then a real opportunity to kick on, and their start to this campaign is wonderful.
It is, and they've grabbed it as well. You've got to give them credit. You know, in the transfer market, they've really gone for it. I mean, brought Martinez in, the goalkeeper, who, you know, I think a lot of people were raising their eyebrows at the fee, but I've always actually liked him. He's got a real presence about him. You know, he's a great shot stopper as well. He's improved them, you know, in that key position. And Barkley, I thought, had a really good first game against Liverpool. Jack Grealish has been outstanding now, but it's not just a one-man band now. And you've got Ollie Watkins. I mean, again, a big fee paid out, but he looks great. Looks totally cut out for the Premier League. Strong, quick, great movement. I think he'll carry on impressing. And well, John, I think they're overpriced here, actually, Aston Villa. And I'm going to go for them to win the game. And I just think Leicester, there's a lot of sort of negatives suddenly appearing. I know they had a good start to the season, but that was a dreadful defeat against West Ham. And there's issues at the moment there with the team. Wilfred Ndidi, I think, is a big, big player for them in midfield. He's out for, I think, it's 2 to 3 months at the moment. We've got another problem now because Kaglai Suinchu has picked up a hamstring injury, so that's exposing him at the back. Daniel Amati, who's an option to replace Ndidi in midfield, he's got a hamstring injury. So there's problems there. I think that lack of a reliable holding midfielder was partly down to why West Ham looked so dangerous against them on the break. I think Villa haven't really got a lot of credit for this unbelievable performance against Liverpool. Everyone putting it down to Liverpool having an off day. They were outstanding in that match. And, you know, why shouldn't they go and follow it up? Villa for me.
Yeah, no, a convincing argument there, Dan. Aaron, what do you make of Leicester? I know throughout last season when they were going on, you know, in a four, Mark Langdon, your colleague, wasn't overly keen on them. He said that they were really punching above their weight in terms of expected goals. And they've been kind of hot and cold this season, haven't they?
They have. They look really good when they can get Vardy or Barnes in behind defences. And that pass that Maddison's always good for when he's knocking it in behind and they're running onto it, that's when they look great. But that's why they struggled so much against West Ham with no Maddison. And Maddison, if he returns, that's massive for them. But if he doesn't, they're vulnerable. Dennis Pratt's still out as well. And that takes away some more creativity in midfield. And then obviously defensively, like Charles, he said, with Noah Marty and Ndidi, Pereira's still out, of course. I think there's a lot of injuries there at the moment to key players as well. So I think Villa at 13-5 are a great price. And obviously Grealish, McGinn, Barkley, Watkins, they've got the weapons, similar weapons to West Ham that can cause you some problems. They're flying high, 3 from 3, 11 board, and yeah, confidence is high. So I think they're a good bet.
Villa fans, make the most of this time. You're playing very well indeed. Monday's game still to go through. Some other fancies from elsewhere across the divisions and the Naps still to come.
Everything is better when it's bigger. Paddy Power's same game multi allows you to combine a number of selections from a single match into one big bet. Check out the same game multi tab and get building your bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to part 3 of the Football Postcast. Delighted to have you, and I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Let's move on to Monday's games, and the first one is at 5:30 p.m. This one is West Brom against Burnley on Sky Sports. Andy, going from Leicester against Aston Villa to West Brom Burnley, is this going to be a slightly more drab affair?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking through some like absolutely brilliant fixtures this weekend. seven or eight like absolute cracking games over the weekend, but Burnley have to play somebody, I suppose. So that's where we are. West Brom are 29-20. The draw is 9-4, and Burnley are 15-8. Burnley, it just looks like one season too many for them. It is going to be a drab affair. Newcastle were all over them, particularly St. Maximum. Just they couldn't cope with him, and he was the real difference. They probably have had two or three transfer windows now where they haven't done enough to improve their side. And I think on a similar vein to Newcastle, the West Brom winger Dean Gana might try and cause them the similar issues to what Newcastle did. And I'll have a very tentative poke at West Brom 29-20, but I'll probably go out for a walk or something while this is on.
Yeah, hopefully the weather's nice for that walk. Dan, what are we thinking here? I mean, West Brom, I said throughout last season, I didn't think they were amazing in the Championship, and they haven't really started too well in the Premier League. Is this a good opportunity for them to kick on?
No, I agree with you, Jack. I don't think they were wonderful in the Championship last season. And I think Burnley, I fancy Burnley to win this game. I think this is the sort of game that Burnley kind of revel in. I think it will be tight, a lot of pressure on the game, physical match. And I think Burnley are always better when their spine is stronger. And they did have Ashley Barnes and James Tarkowski for the game at Newcastle. And I know they lost 3-1 and didn't play that well, but getting those players back is important. Maybe they weren't, you know, fully fit. 2 weeks on, should be a little bit better. I think West Brom still got, you know, got the worst defensive record in the league, 13 goals conceded. And at centre forward, I mean, it sounds like they might get this Carlin Grant deal over the line. He's having a medical, getting him in from Huddersfield. But is Carlin Grant going to be able to come in and make an impact in his first game? He hasn't played since July. He's not been involved for Huddersfield this season. So I see issues at both ends of the pitch for West Brom. And I think Burnley look overpriced to win a tight game.
That seems like a strange one, Dan, that signing. I mean, I know Grant was, you know, highly rated at Huddersfield, but like you say, he hasn't played for so long, and it doesn't seem like a player who'll be capable of keeping a team in the Premier League, does he?
Yeah, and he's not even really an out-and-out centre-forward. He actually, you know, he's at his best often sort of playing off of one of the flanks as well. So I'm not even sure that, you know, he's the right fit for what they need. He did look good in the Premiership, you know, when he... towards the end of that season when Huddersfield went down, he scored a few goals, didn't he? But I'm not sure he's the right type of player they need.
Yeah, I guess it, you know, we're getting to this stage in the transfer window now. Of course, the domestic window shuts on the 16th, which is tomorrow. So some teams who are maybe slightly short-staffed might be getting slightly desperate. Aaron, what's your thoughts on this game?
This is another really tight game. I mean, I know it's very early, but the relegation shake-up could become a lot clearer after this weekend. We've got Sheffield United against Fulham and West Brom against Burnley. Four teams about a win, all playing against each other. Burnley have had a lot of important players missing, and I know the injuries are starting to clear, but I don't know, I just think that West Brom have more potential match winners at the moment with Dean Garner and Matias Pereira. They've had a really tough set of fixtures. They've played Leicester, Everton, Chelsea and Southampton, but they scored twice against Everton and they were in that match until Gibbs got sent off. And obviously the 3-3 draw against Chelsea, I mean, that's a great point. I know the circumstances, it probably looks like two dropped in the end, but I just think at the moment they've got more match winners than Burnley, who obviously Barnes, Brady, Goodmanson are all on the mend, but they are lacking match practice. See, they haven't signed anyone, and Dyche is becoming a bit frustrated with that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. 8 p.m. on Monday sees Leeds take on Wolves. This is going to be an exciting one. I'm sure Leeds might be making a few more transfers come this game. Andy, is there been money for Leeds in this? Because it seems as if they're everyone's kind of second favourite team at the moment, which seems strange because I think Leeds fans prefer to be hated, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting one for Leeds fans with everyone kind of pouring admiration on them since the season started. There probably will be a bit of money for them here, especially last game on a Monday evening against a Wolves team who look a bit weary since the season started. I think last season's exploits are weighing heavy on the legs. And Nuno's already been given out about fixture pile-ups. I mean, we're four games in and he's already kind of given out. And he had Jimenez, Traore and Kante joining the kind of legion of Portuguese players on international duty this week. So no let-up for them. And I couldn't think of a worse team to play than Leeds, who were just going to be full of energy and just boring away at the Wolves side, at a weary Wolves side. So I'm going to take Leeds to win here at 29-20. The draw is 11-5 and Wolves are 9-5.
Damn, 29. 20 on Leeds. That seems like a fairly big price, doesn't it?
I'm going to go with Wolves at 9-5. I just think, I mean, the game's on Sunday, so you have got a little bit more time for these Wolves players to recover from their exertions over the international break. I'm not totally sold yet on Leeds. I think at the moment they're kind of getting priced up quite short because there's been a reaction to those results, early season performances against Manchester City and Liverpool. You've got to remember that Manchester City have lost 5-2 at home to Leicester this season. Liverpool obviously had that thumping 7-2 defeat at Aston Villa. So maybe the form of those two results isn't something that you should be reading too much into. And I'd look more at the performance when they played Fulham, Elland Road, and they won 4-3, but they got loads of chances. Fulham won the shot count and were a little bit unlucky, really, not to get a result. Now, that's at home to the team that's the favourites to finish bottom in the Premier League. So I'm just not completely sold yet on Leeds. I'm not sure they're actually going to be a top half team. So Wolves, on the other hand, have been seventh each of the last two seasons. I think they've got better players up front with Jimenez and Adama Traore. I think they could hurt Leeds. Leeds are going to play that attacking style that they play. And I think Wolves, they're great normally on a counter-attack and they're set up to hurt them in this game. So Wolves for me.
Well, it's usually me down on Leeds in the football postcast. So role reversal, me and Dan Charles today. Aaron, who are you fancying here?
I'm going to go Leeds to win and both teams to score at 4-1. I mean, Leeds are going to dominate the ball. They had more possession than Man City, which shows just how comfortable they are at this level and how quickly they are adjusting. Fulham had 53% possession at Molineux. And Wolves, obviously, they've lost Doherty, lost Jota. I'm not sure they are as strong as last season. I do acknowledge what Charles is saying, that Wolves do fare better on the counter, so having less possession will probably suit them. And Leeds, the way they play, they give the opposition a lot of chances. All four of their opponents have had at least 14 shots against them this season, which includes Sheffield United. They conceded 3 at home to Fulham, and I just don't fancy them keeping a clean sheet. But at the same time, their intensity and energy, I think that will just stand them in good stead. So 4-1, Leeds to win and both teams to score.
Yeah, it's a big price, that nice little angle there. Right, that's the Premier League done, and there's some absolutely brilliant games that we've previewed there. So hopefully you're armed with some decent insight for the Premier League this week. Let's have a look at any other divisions. Andy, any other fancies? I know that some people specialise in European football. Some of your colleagues love a non-league angle. So what are you feeling here?
Yeah, I'm just going to drop down one division. I wouldn't be as exotic as some of the other lads who can go for teams in the Southern Counties Leagues and stuff like that. So I'm just going to take Swansea to beat Huddersfield. Swansea have looked really good so far this season. They continue to improve under Steve Cooper. I think 20 to 23 shades of odds on here is a fair enough price. And Huddersfield have lost 10 of their last 11 away games. And Swansea will, I think, continue their unbeaten run here against a weak Huddersfield team.
Yeah, I agree. Swansea have looked really good this season indeed. Dan, what about you?
I've got two League One fancies. Crewe at home to Blackpool. Crewe's 13th at the moment, but they won their last two games, both at home, beat MK Dons 2-0 and Wigan 3-0. I think they're really adjusting well now since winning promotion last season. And against Blackpool had a big squad revamp over the summer. Brought in, actually, I think, a lot of good players, but I think they're struggling to gel. They've actually lost 4 of their opening 5 games. I think they'll improve as the season goes on. But last 3 games, they've lost to Gillingham, 2-0 away, lost 3-2 at home to Lincoln and 4-1 at home to Ipswich. So they're not playing well at the moment. Other one I would look at, Wimbledon at home to Shrewsbury. Obviously, Wimbledon at the moment playing their games at Loftus Road. But I still think at 9-5, a big price. They're 10th in the league after a 1-0 win at Swindon last weekend. I think for the outsiders on the market against Shrewsbury, who are fifth from bottom, not had a win in their opening 4 games at the moment, is a little bit wrong. So Wimbledon to beat Shrewsbury as well.
What's the gap like in kind of quality now between League One and League Two? Because you look at that League One division, there's some seriously big clubs in there. But as you mentioned, their Crewe have adjusted really, really well, haven't they?
Yeah, I think it's actually quite a smaller gap. And part of the reason is kind of what happened last season with Bury you know, disappearing and Bolton being, you know, so bad as well, it meant that the quality of the other teams that are then dropping into that bottom four, maybe not so great that left the division. So you've got some poor teams that still almost by default stayed in the division, and that means that teams coming up from League Two are actually, you know, able to compete at quite a high level, as Crewe and Plymouth are doing so far. So yeah, I think it's the smallest gap between divisions, you know, out of the top four leagues.
Are there any EFL angles for you?
I won't give away my nap, but just one in the Championship. I think Bristol City at 17-10 to win at Barnsley are a good price. They're setting the early pace in the Championship. They've won 4 from 4. And Barnsley have collected just 1 point from 4 fixtures. And Gerhard Struber, the mastermind behind their survival last season, he's left for New York Red Bulls. And before he left, he said that they were really short on punch. They needed a new striker. And he was worried about their lack of ambition of the owners. So with that in mind, I think they could struggle.
Yeah, I'm sad to see Struber go. He was a wonderful asset for them, wasn't he? So
he really was.
Yeah, no, a big loss for Barnsley, that. And I'm sure they've done well if New York Red Bulls have had to pay compensation. Right, they are the EFL angles, and it's time for the naps.
This will not be beaten.
Okay, it's time for the gents' best bets of the week. And Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a Leeds win. I do take on board what Dan said, but I think they've had a very impressive start to the season. Beat Man City on XG last time out and actually had 5 more shots on target than probably one of the best teams in Europe. So I'm happy for them to do the job against Wolves.
Leeds, the first team in the enhanced treble this week. Dan, what's the second?
Dan, in League Two, going to go for Cambridge to win away to Scunthorpe. Cambridge up second in League Two after a 2-1 win at Newport, who were top going into that game. Sorry, at home to Newport, that was. The highest scorers in the league, Cambridge, with 10 goals. Got the second best defence, only 3 goals conceded. You'll know well, Jack, Wes Houlihan, who's gone there. Fantastic player for that level. We've got Paul Mullins been banging the goals for them as well. So, really well, Cambridge. Scunthorpe, on the other hand, although they're quite a big club in the fourth tier level, they have been cost-cutting. It's quite a youthful Scunthorpe side this season. They've only got 4 points after 5 games after last Saturday's 4-1 loss at home to Forest Green. So confidence could be an issue. I think Cambridge will beat them this weekend.
Yeah, question of the week. Please do tweet us in at Racing Post Sport. Morecambe lead that League Two division. Cambridge are in second. Morecambe are top of the division, but with a minus goal difference. And I want to know, when was the last time you can remember a team leading a league in England with a minus goal difference? Tweet us at Racing Post Sport. And Aaron, you can finish off the treble this week with the naps.
I'm sticking with the League Two theme, and I'm going Forest Green at home to Stevenage. Forest Green are still unbeaten after 5 games. They appear one of the strongest sides in the division, and the way they play, they've got an attacking mindset under Mark Cooper. They're creating chances at a dozen. I fancy them to beat Stevenage, who have failed to win on road trips to Barrow, Bradford and Mansfield.
Forest Green, Cambridge and Leeds is the enhanced nap treble this week. You can find that on the Paddy Power website. We'll link it in the description of this podcast. A massive thank you to Aaron, Dan and Andy for all of their insight this week. If you are having a bet this weekend, please do remember, as always, to gamble responsibly. And we'll be back again next week. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.